Blog Talk Radio.
Ready, Rob?
Oh, yeah. Sports fan around the globe, where y'all at tonight?
Party started. Here we go. Let's kick
all
it
in and talk to
us. 12th Man is officially on the air. What? Ready, Rob?
Your time is up, my time is now. You can't see me, my time is now. It's a franchise where I'm shining now. You can't see me, my time is now.
Yeah, welcome, of course, to Talking Sports with the 12th Man. Our second edition of the 2013 year. Today is, of course, Tuesday, January the 8th, and I am Andre Peterson, joined by Mr. Robert Porter. You are now officially Talking Sports with the 12th Man. As always, we have a lot of great topics to dive into, but I would never always start the show. I got to check in with my co-host, Mr. Robert Ford. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Man, I'm doing fantastic. Of course, we got to give congrats to Alabama, the Crimson Tide, winning yet another national title. So congrats to Nick Saban and Alabama, Crimson Tide, and, of course, the whole state of Alabama, of course. And making it 7 in a row for the SEC, and believe it or not, it's 4 in a row for the state of Alabama. You know, we talk about Alabama winning the last 3 or 4 BCS championships, but Auburn won one of those as well in the last 4 years. So college football has been king in the state of Alabama for the last 4 years.
I wonder how many kids are named Saban right about now. It's pretty interesting, Saban or Nick, yeah. But good deal. Yes, congrats to Alabama. We're going to dive into that as well. We've got a lot of things to talk about, obviously. So pretty exciting weekend, as always, and of course, and I obviously kind of feel sorry for Notre Dame, but it is what it is, and as mentioned, we're going to definitely talk about that as well. But for those that want to call into the show, and we apologize for any technical difficulties that happened last week, we'd love to hear from you. The number to call in, of course, it's 424-243-9519. As well as you can follow us on Twitter. Our hashtag is, or actually our actual Twitter handle is at 12th Man Sports, and also on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/12thmansports. So there's a lot of ways to get in touch with us, all that good stuff. So let's jump it off, Rob, and we're going to kick it off with some NFL talk. The playoffs are actually kicking on right now, and we are going to talk about some playoff predictions for this weekend, a lot of big games, and we're going to also talk about what happened to RG3 because you can't get away from that. Let's first dive into some playoff predictions for this weekend, Mr. Robert. You ready?
All right, let's get right into it. We can start off with the first game here, the Ravens at the Broncos. You know how I feel about the way the Broncos have been playing. I'm still thinking that that's still the pick for the AFC to make it to the Super Bowl, to make it to New Orleans. And I like the Broncos in this matchup. Denver had a hard-fought victory, prevailed in the end over the Colts. The Ravens this past weekend, but I like the Broncos in this matchup to move on to the AFC Championship game. And of course, they have home field advantage throughout the AFC playoffs here.
Yeah, I agree with you. And we always talk about, you know, certain matchups that you look at. I think the matchup you got to look at this time is quarterback. And as much as Flacco's been kind of improving, if you will, I still think that's the key. And obviously, Baltimore does have a great defense, but I think ultimately Denver has more of a complete team, so you have to like them in this particular matchup. Peyton Manning, what a difference a year makes. Even though Tim Tebow led in the playoffs, Peyton obviously a much better quarterback. The team has been on fire, and in spite of Ray Lewis and his last hurrah, I think the Broncos are going to definitely pull this game out.
Absolutely, and then we have another good game here on Saturday night. Very intriguing game here, one that I'm kind of going back and forth on as far as a prediction is concerned. The Packers at the 49ers on Saturday night in prime time. I think it's going to be a heck of a ball game. And I'm leaning toward the 49ers in this ball game. I know our listeners in the Bay Area is going to really like this, but I actually like the 49ers in this game. I think they're going to bring a physicality to the ball game that the Packers won't be able to handle. I think the Packers are a little bit more of a finesse team. And the running game is still a little bit weak. And I think the 49ers will be able to score enough points to win this game and to slow down the Packers offense. I don't think you can stop the Packers offense, but I think they'll be good enough to slow them down just a tad bit. and win a nail biter. I'm looking at about a 3-6 point victory here for the 49ers at home to advance to the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I like the 49ers as well. And a couple of good points, as you mentioned, that have to do with the running game. And if the Packers ever figure out a way to get that running back position solved, and not to say that they haven't had, like you said, kind of their finesse team right now. And as soon as they want to get physical and kind of move on, I think that's whenever they'll do the thing. And obviously, like I said, you know, Aaron Rodgers has definitely been an elite quarterback. So, as mentioned, it's not going to be an easy task for the 49ers. But I do think, as you mentioned, it's going to be a close game, and I do think that the 49ers are definitely going to eke this one out. Setting it up, but I guess also the next one, Seattle Seahawks at the Atlanta Falcons. And go ahead, Rob, go ahead and pick the Seahawks in the, you know, in this particular matchup. I just already know it, man. Nationally, Falcons are not getting a lot of love. Everyone likes the Seahawks. They're the darling right now, and obviously the Falcons haven't proven that they can win in the playoffs. So obviously this is going to be an interesting matchup. You would think that Seattle's got a pretty tough, excellent running game with Marshawn Lynch, pretty excellent solid defense. But like I said, you're not in Atlanta, and everyone's kind of like, hey, this is the game, man. We're kind of waiting for this. So kind of similar to what happened to the Giants. I'm not saying it's going to end up like that, but I'm just saying that the Falcons are going to definitely be ready to play this game too. So I like the Falcons in this matchup, in spite of not a lot of love for us on the national front.
Well, if you look at this season as a whole here, the Falcons have seemed to have played their best football whenever the national media has basically knocked them down and say that they weren't an elite team and things of that nature. So if you look at this season as a whole, that's when the Falcons have played their best football. And I think the Falcons, even though, of course, I'm not a fan, most of the season I had them either one or two in my power ranking. So, I've definitely shown the Falcons a lot of love from that standpoint. But most of the season, whenever they've been dogged by the media, is when they've risen up to play their best football. And so it should be interesting to see how they prevail in this game this Sunday afternoon against the Seattle Seahawks. And Seattle, as you mentioned, a strong running game. If you have a strong running game, a strong defense, it travels really well. I'm looking at this ball game to be an extremely close football game. And, the Falcons have got over a lot of humps. They finally beat the Saints at home this year. They finally beat the Giants after being whipped by them in the playoffs last year. So they have gotten over a few humps. Can they get over this hump of being 0-3 in the Mike Schmidt, Matt Ryan era? So it's going to be interesting. I'm going to say Seattle squeaks out this victory on the road. Once again, another close game. I think Seattle is strong where the Falcons are weak, where the Falcons can't stop the run, and Seattle is a strong running team. So I think they play a ball control offense to keep that high potent Falcons offense off the field for a lot of the game. And where the Falcons are strong, Seattle are also strong. Seattle, of course, has one of the better secondaries in the league. And, of course, the Falcons have one of the premier offensive passing games in the league. So that should be interesting. Now, Seattle's going to be without Chris Clemens, their premier pass rusher. But Seattle does have a decent amount of depth there as far as pass rushers are concerned. So I like Seattle. I know our listeners in Atlanta is not going to like me, but I like Seattle. I know we have more listeners in Atlanta than we do in Seattle. But I like Seattle to squeak out a road victory here.
Gotcha. Good stuff. I appreciate the love, too. That was a very fair analysis, Robin. We'll just see how it plays out. So appreciate that. You may hear some boos in the background, but that's okay. The next matchup, we have the Texans at the Patriots. And this is another pretty big matchup. Another team that, being the Houston Texans, that's under a lot of scrutiny as well. They were pretty much picked to be the AFC representative in the Super Bowl. But obviously, you got to play the games. You got to play the season on. This is a pretty big game for Matt Schaub as well. And in spite of how, we questioned them last week versus the Bengals and they did their thing, Arian Foster ran the ball. I mean, they were physical. They were dominant. Now, how do you think they're going to match up against the very, very explosive New England Patriot team, Rob?
Well, I'll tell you what. I know Houston is also another area where we have a lot of listeners. And, you know, last time Houston went up there to Foxborough, they got manhandled by the Patriots. And I think it's going to be a little bit closer this time, but I still like the Patriots coming out on top. You just never know what the weather's going to be like up there. You know how these teams from the South just does not play well when they're on the road to these cold weather cities. And I hate to say it, but I like New England. I think Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, they've just been here numerous times before. They know how to handle these types of situations. Their experience. And Houston, with them falling apart down the stretch here, just blew an opportunity to have these games at home. And I think that's the difference maker. I think if this game was in Houston, I would give Houston a lot, you know, an opportunity to win this game. And but right now, I like the Patriots. And I don't think it's going to be by 28 points like the first game was. I'm looking at maybe like a 10-point victory, a little bit closer. And but I still like the Patriots to come out on top and set up Brady Manning AFC Championship.
Yeah, it's going to be a close game too. Like you said, I agree with you. It's going to be tough for our fans in Houston because you know we want to show them a lot on too. But it's going to be a close game, as mentioned. Matt Schaub has got to do a lot, kind of similar to the Falcons. He has to prove he can win in the playoffs too. So we'll see how that plays out. Patriots may have the edge with coaching and quarterback play as well. We are moving right along in the show. We're making good progress. We've got about 18 minutes left. And once again, we want to throw out some numbers if you want to. Definitely give us your thoughts. Are we crazy? Do you agree with what we're going with for our picks? The number to call in, once again, it's 424-243-9519. Don't forget to tweet us as well as liking us on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/12thmansports. So we got a lot of things to discuss as we keep it moving. We're still going to stay in the NFL, and obviously a big game over this weekend, big controversy was Mr. RG3, Robert Griffin III. He had a significant injury, if you will, and some people say that actually cost his team the game, and do you put the blame on him trying to come into the game, Rob, or do you put the blame on Mr. Mike Shanahan, the coach, Rob? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, this is a tough one here. You know, a couple of years ago, everybody was bashing Jay Cutler for being injured and not playing the second half of the NFC Championship game against the Packers. I don't know if you recall that at all. And, I mean, he was being bashed nationally for not having the heart and soul to be able to come back and play in that game. And now RG3 is getting criticized for actually playing in the game, which is, I'm like, you know, which is correct here. I don't understand it here. And, you know, I think if RG3 goes to the coaching staff and he says that he's okay, he feels fine, then I think it falls on the player. And, you know, so it's hard for me to say. I think ultimately the team trainers have to give the coaches, you know, a good prognosis of, you know, how he's feeling and things of that nature. And I don't know what's the process here, you know, who to blame. But I'm going to say this one has to fall on the player. I think if the player is not feeling well, he needs to give the coach, you know, and the trainer, you know. So I'm thinking here, if Shanahan is hearing that RG3 is healthy, then I think he's going to leave him in the game. And maybe RG3, you know, he gives the guy a lot of credit. He's got a lot of heart. He wanted to play. But I think ultimately you can clearly see. Well, I think I'm changing my thought here on this already. I'm going to go blame it on Shanahan. You can clearly see he wasn't healthy. So obviously this got to fall on Shanahan, in my opinion. You know, you got to make a good judgment decision here. And you see the guy's not the same player. You take him out of the game and you go with the backup quarterback.
Yeah, that's a good point. So I like how you talked about it earlier whenever you referenced Jay Cutler. And I think the difference between that was with Jay Cutler, I don't know if you remember that injury, you really couldn't see. He really didn't look like there was a problem with him. I don't know if you saw the injury and the way that he was kind of like walking around the sidelines, and it didn't look like he was physically like hurt or anything. And I think that's why most people were upset with him. They're like, man, Jay Cutler, you look like you're fine, you know, and you know, because we couldn't really see what the injury was, you know. And then it looked like he didn't have the heart to actually come back and play the game. I know he was getting beat up. So that's probably what happened with that one. Now, with RG3, you clearly saw that he was definitely struggling as far as, you know, he was limping a little bit. He wasn't as explosive on certain plays. and it was actually affecting his play whenever he was throwing the ball. He couldn't get, you know, he couldn't get his plants down. I mean, and then also whenever you saw, whenever he backed up in the one and missed that snap, that was another issue situation too. So, you know, kind of like you, I'm gonna definitely blame Mike Shanahan, because you have to definitely look at your team and look at the players, excuse me, and say, hey, you know, you've been a warrior. Thank you so much for getting us to where you got us. I mean, now let's, you know, let's make sure that we don't lose this game and put it into something. You know, you know, kind of like, you know, you kind of say, hey, kid, you did a good job. Like the relief pitcher, if you will, Rob. You did a good job. Let's make sure, you know, we can keep going, and let's save you for the next season, or make sure you don't seriously damage yourself anymore too, because obviously now we're trying to figure out how serious that injury is. So I definitely put the blame on Mike Shanahan in this instance, sir.
Yeah, you don't want to hurt the guy's career. Of course, you're going to lose a football game, but you don't want to hurt the guy's career. And now, as it turns out, I mean, there's a strong possibility that RG3 could be missing September and a portion of October of next football season. And so now you're talking about, you know, missing possibly, you know, 4 to 6 games of the regular season next year. And that could be a huge setback for the Redskins, even going into next season.
Yeah. Good job. I'm going to skip over the coaching carousel real quick, Rob, because I want to make a quick adjustment as far as talking about Reggie Wayne and his comments about Ray Lewis. You got two university, the U players kind of going at it.
Yes, very surprised.
It was very surprised. He actually he didn't like Ray Lewis's post-game dance, and he called that disrespectful. So do you agree with this, Rob? What are your thoughts on this? And I definitely want to add in and say something about this as well.
Well, like you said, very surprising, the two U players going head-to-head here. And this is my philosophy on this. If you don't like it, then go out on the field and beat them. And obviously the Ravens won the football game. Ray Lewis had the right to dance at the end of the game. Reggie Wayne, your team lost. You know, take it like a man, walk off the field, shake the other team hand, let the other team dance, and, you know, go about your business. And so I don't think it was disrespectful. I think it was his last game. It was just having a little fun, last home game in Baltimore. Let the man dance.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And this is the thing, too. And the reason why they set it up like that, because, you know, Ray Lewis, he said he's going to retire at the end of the season. This may be the last time that he's ever going to get a chance to dance, you know, in Baltimore.
Definitely
so
the last time at home,
way.
For sure.
Yeah, it's definitely his last game. So give him a chance to kind of go out on top, have his last dance, do what he's got to do. And it's kind of a good way to go out and show the fans, thank you so much for all that you've done. He doesn't do it after he sacks somebody. He doesn't do it to showcase or anything like that. He does it as kind of a hype thing. So he's done it 8 times this year, or maybe less than 8 times this year because he was hurt. But I think it's kind of a nice way to go out, you know, and this is like, hey, this is how we remember Ray Lewis. Let him go out. Let him do his thing. And, you know, like I said, Reggie Wayne, I know you're pretty upset about that. But that's kind of Ray being Ray, and I kind of think it's a good gesture to say, let's go out like this and let Ray do his thing. So that's kind of my thoughts on that as well. So, you know.
Absolutely.
There you go. Absolutely. All right, we are moving right along, sir. Let's talk about the NFL coaching carousel. And there's been a lot of movement. The last time we were talking here, we definitely were talking about Andy Reid. He actually did get locked in with the Kansas City Chiefs. But I want to take a quick thing. We'll talk about Andy Reid as well. But I want to talk about the Buffalo Bills. They've actually filled their head coaching guy with Doug Marrone. He used to be coached at Syracuse, but he was actually a coach for an offensive coordinator for the Saints. So I'd love to hear your thoughts about this, Rob, because I don't know if this was kind of from left field, but do you think this is a good move for the Bills, and is this more of the offensive move for them? Or kind of give us your thoughts about Doug Marrone, if he was kind of coaching the guys from 2006 as well. So go ahead, I'm sorry.
Well, obviously, you know, I probably may know a lot more about him than the average, you know, football fan, you know, coming from Syracuse. And but I would have to say this is a very good hire. I think what he's going to do, he's going to bring an innovative offense up there to Buffalo, just like he did to Syracuse. He got the Syracuse job. They ran the Sean Payton offense, turned that program around. They've got 2 bowl victories. And I think this was a program, if he was able to stay there a little longer, I think Syracuse would have been, contending to be a top 5 team in the ACC on a regular basis. So I think he really did a fantastic job turning that program around. But he is probably more of a pro coach than a college coach. And so I actually think this is a pretty good hire for Buffalo. He's going to be, you know, a lot of teams was trying to secure interviews with him. And so I actually, like I said, he's going to bring an innovative style to that program up there in Buffalo. A very sound offensive line coach as well as a very good offensive coach as well. So I think it's a very good hire.
Gotcha. Let's keep it moving. And obviously, let's talk a little bit more about, if you want to elaborate on Mr. Andy Reid. He actually got solidified with the Kansas City Chiefs. He's bringing Tom Eckert, this general that he previously worked with. He's also bringing back Juan Castillo, one of his best friends, too. So he's kind of formulating that staff in Kansas City, and I think that's a good move. So I don't know if you want to elaborate on this as well or move on to some other news, sir.
Well, absolutely. Andy Reid was 14 years in Philadelphia, and sometimes your stay it comes to an end at certain places, and he was there for a long period of time. But I think Reid is still a very good football coach, and I think going to a new place will excite him a little bit, bring a new place to him and things of that nature like that. I think it just brings a new level of excitement, going to another place with the Chiefs. And the Chiefs, have sound ownership there. They have a sound fan base as well. So I think this is just going to bring a new level of excitement to them. You mentioned Juan Castillo, and he's going back to being the offensive line coach, which is really his strength, and not a defensive coordinator. He's one of the better offensive line coaches in the business. And so Andy Reid was able to convince him to move back to the offensive line and not be a defensive coordinator where he got fired. In Philadelphia. So I think this is a very good move for the Chiefs. And I think, the Broncos, how many more years are you going to get out of Peyton Manning? They're the leading team in that division. So I think he has an opportunity to build a franchise there and slowly creep their way up to being a team in that division to beat.
If you're a Chiefs fan, what do you think quarterback-wise? Are you going to draft a quarterback, or are you going to check free agency? Real quick, what do you think they're going to do with a quarterback guru like Andy Reid?
Well, if you look at the history of Andy Reid, what he's done in the draft for quarterbacks, he's reached for quarterbacks, time and time again in the draft. I mean, Nick Foles was the guy that could have gone in the third or fourth round. Reid took him in the second. And he's done a good job with some of these quarterbacks as far as development. Kevin Cobb went to the top of the second round with Philadelphia, a guy that was probably projected to go a lot later than that. And while he was with Philly, he was showing some progress. Obviously, he digressed when he went to Arizona. But Andy Reid is not scared to reach for quarterbacks, and I think he got that from Mike Holmgren while he was in Green Bay. They reach for quarterbacks and stockpile quarterbacks into develop them and to trade them for draft picks. So with that being said, he's going to reach for a quarterback at the number one pick in the draft. I don't think as of right now, as of this date, January 8, 2013, there's not a quarterback worthy of being picked number one pick in the draft. But I think you got to look at a guy like Geno Smith going number one here. And just because they need a quarterback, Andy Reid is not afraid to reach for a quarterback and develop a quarterback. So I think that's what's going to happen here. The Chiefs will draft a QB at number one.
Gotcha. We'll keep an eye on the other coaching vacancies right now. Just a quick update in that the Arizona Cardinals have actually promoted somebody from within. I want to say if I can get his name right, Kilm or something
Steve,
like that.
Steve Kilm is the new general manager in Arizona.
So he's been promoted for Arizona. So that's a good move for them. He's been with the organization for a long time, so it's a good move for them. They stayed in-house. They still don't have their coach yet, so we'll see how that plays out. As far as that, and we'll talk about other moves. I know that there's Lovie Smith is actually interviewing with the Eagles. A lot of movement, but once that actually comes down, we'll get a quick check to see how all the news updates as well, too. So
yeah, Dave Caldwell from the Falcons is getting the general manager position in Jacksonville.
So we'll see how that plays out, too. Not to cut you off, but I wonder if you want to add anything else before we move on to the next topic, sir.
Well, you mentioned Lovie Smith. Look for Jay Gruden to also get an interview with Cincinnati as well as Philadelphia. So he's becoming a hot name as well. And Mike McCoy from the Denver Broncos, offensive coordinator, he's hopping around all over the country for interviews as well.
Gotcha. Good. Big moves. Obviously, Rex Ryan. I'm sorry. Did he get fired by the Cowboys? Who's the defensive coordinator for the Cowboys. I just lost it. I have that on my notes.
Oh, yeah.
I know somebody get
Rob Ryan.
I'm thinking, gave him the pink slip there. I apologize to the fans out there. I was trying to think of the, one of the Ryans. Anyway, we're getting ready to talk about the Jets, obviously, and they fired Tony Sperano, and Norv Turner's going to replace him. We'll talk about that. So what do you think about that move?
Well, it's not official.
That's
just Norv Turner going to the Jets is not official. There's just some talk about that. It seems to be a guy that Rex Ryan would like to have. And I think will be a great hire for the Jets if they're able to convince Norv Turner to be the offensive coordinator. And it'd be interesting because Rex and Norv Turner got into it a few years ago, so it'd be interesting. They joined forces up there in New York. But I've always thought Norv Turner to be a very good offensive coordinator, not so great a head coach.
Yep.
And so I think if the Jets can secure his services as being the offensive coordinator, that would be a fantastic hire for the Jets, in my opinion.
I agree wholeheartedly. All right, we've got about 4 minutes left, and I'm going to change up some stuff real quick. So I really want to talk about the BCS championship game, Rob. Just kind of recapping a couple things about Mr. Nick Saban. Your thoughts on the games or any particular games that kind of stuck out to you, and we could definitely keep this going as we get ready to set up for the OT portion because we still got to talk about some basketball news and some baseball stuff as well, some fantasy shout-outs too. But just real quick, I don't know if you want to kind of share your thoughts about the BCS, and Saban is kind of like putting his stamp on Alabama, man. That dynasty is definitely going to be here for a while.
Yeah, well, that game was no game last night, I tell you that. I mean,
yeah.
That game was over by the end of the first quarter. It was a horrible BCS National Championship game. But give credit to Alabama. They were just totally dominant. Notre Dame looked like they didn't even belong on the same stage. And they're just not ready yet. And, I mean, that was just evident by the way the game played out. The skill positions, there was a huge difference in the skill positions versus Notre Dame skill positions. There's a huge difference in the quarterback play in the game. And Alabama was just dominant in every phase of the game. The offensive line was just dominating Notre Dame's defensive line. Manti Te'o looked scared out there. Didn't look like he belonged on the field. I mean, I would project his draft stock to fall a little bit after that game. Missing tackles, one-arm in tackles. I mean, he looked like an amateur out there, which he is. He's a college player. But yeah, he didn't look like he belonged. Looked like he played scared. Looking at his eyes, just didn't look like he belonged out there. And it just looked like they had no intensity. Alabama was just too dominant. It wasn't even a game. I was watching basketball.
Oh, wow. And to be fair, there's a couple calls that are kind of questionable. You know, a couple things. Obviously, their great tight end had a nice little catch there. It's kind of questionable. And then whenever the guy ran into the guy, whenever he's trying to get that punt return and stuff like that. So certain things that could have set them up to be a little bit different. But, you know, as mentioned, it didn't change the outcome of the game because, as you mentioned, I don't think Te'o had seen linemen like that coming at him with that type of speed. And like you said, it just, you know, he missed a lot of tackles, missed a lot of reads. He looked very unsure, as well as the whole Notre Dame defense did. So I'm sure they got a little tired, and Alabama just definitely imposed their will on Notre Dame. So, you know, it's just kind of a testament to Nick Saban kind of doing his thing, and you know, McCarron had a good game. We'll talk about his girlfriend in a quick second, too. But let's set up for next week. We're about 90 seconds into the show. Let's set up for the OT portion, Rob, as we get ready
real
for 15
quick.
More minutes of talking sports. Yeah, go ahead.
Real quick, everyone, join us next Tuesday night, same time, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. out on the West Coast. And for those of you all in Germany, that's 5 a.m. your time. So set your alarms really early and catch us out there in Germany. That's 5 a.m. That will be Wednesday morning for you all. And for those of you all who want to catch us on the OT, you can listen to us tomorrow. We're still going to be talking more college football. Are the Lakers in trouble? We're going to talk about the Lakers here in OT here. So we still have a lot to cover. So if you're at your lunch break, sitting at your desk tomorrow, click on the same link and you can catch our OT portion of the show. Once again, join us next Tuesday and listen to our OT portion. Good night, world.
Good night, people. Yeah, as Robert mentioned, we appreciate all of our listeners. You got the numbers. Definitely follow us on Facebook. We do a great job of posting things that are going on, a lot of sports news, all that good stuff. Like us, give us your thoughts, tell us what you're thinking. Once again, the number to call is 424-243-9519. Save that. And also, like I said, like us on Facebook. We're at the facebook.com/12manSports. Twitter at 12manSports as well. For Robert Ford, I'm Andre Peterson. We will see you guys next week.
Good night, people.
Good night, people. Let's jump into the OT portion of the show, and let's keep this going. Now, I like how you talked about this, Robin, and you made a good point. Is Saban that much better than the rest of college football? And right now, it definitely seems that way, sir, because if you have great coaches or a great coach, I think it just elevates everything else. I mean, everyone plays up to that level. If you look at the Bill Belichick of the world, and, you know, there's certain coaches that you know set it up. And I can even, you know, say a case for Les Miles. He's still living on the legacy that Nick Saban left for him. It takes something to keep continuing that, obviously. But, you know, Saban, I mean, at this juncture, the dynasty is clicking, you know. But I do have to give some props to a couple other schools here, and I'll let you kind of add your thoughts. And props to a school like Texas A&M. I was thoroughly impressed with the way they were able to perform in the bowl game. And obviously, you know, you may say that it may not be that good of a quality opponent, but, you know, Johnny Manziel did his thing. That's going to be a very, very tough school to put up with in the future, as well as Louisville. I was actually impressed with what Louisville did versus Florida. So, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, Charlie Strong was going to be, you know, in Nick Saban's level, but I was just impressed with how he prepared that team. And there's some schools that, you know, obviously there's some SEC schools that we're going to talk about with Texas A&M that are going to definitely put a challenge to Alabama. But right now, you know, they're definitely the cream of the crop.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Obviously, you went 3 out of 4 in BCS National Championships, 4 out of the last 8 BCS National Championships. Yeah, he's definitely ahead of the curve as far as everyone else when it comes to head coaches in college football. You know, the great thing is about, he's also a great salesman. You know, he knows how to go sit down with parents in their living room and sell them on why they should come to Alabama and sit under his tutelage. He's going to develop them from the program. He has been a pro coach, and both a defensive coordinator, a secondary coach, as well as a head coach for a few years. And plus, he's got a lot of relationships with general managers and head coaches in the NFL. So I think, you know, that's one of the things that players and parents listen to when Nick Saban walks into their living room. He's going to get them pro ready. And he is that much better than the rest. Especially, I think Pete Carroll was the same kind of guy on the college level, but of course he's back in the pro game. And there are a few guys that could possibly, you know, challenge him. Kevin Sumlin, you know, you mentioned Texas A&M, is going to be really interesting. And obviously a lot of these players that he was coaching at Texas A&M this year, he didn't recruit them. But I think he has an opportunity to build something there at Texas A&M as far as, you know, selling recruits to come there and showing the level of excitement that Texas A&M has right now. So that should be really interesting right now. But as of right now, I mean, I can't think of anybody that's ready to challenge Nick Saban on a national level just yet. I mean, I see Alabama being a tough team to beat here for at least the next 5 years again. They're going to be near the top just about every year contending for a national title.
Yeah, like you said, it's just that machine's going to keep going. He's going to keep those recruits coming. Everyone's going to say, I'm going to Alabama to play for a championship. And that's what makes it so tough. And even Saban used that. He used the Michael Jordan quote, basically saying the toughest championship is the next one because you're fighting against yourself. So, you know, definitely he has the machine going. He definitely has the mentality. He's going to get the recruits. So the only problem they may run into is having a younger team because, you know, they're going to keep getting drafted and going pro, and then he's going to have to restock the shelves. But they got a lot of depth, and my SEC schools, LSU's, the Georgias of the world, you're going to have to do a lot to try to upseat Alabama right now. So, you know, we'll keep it going. Anything you want to talk about, you know, another distraction, if you will, and A.J. McCarron and his girlfriend still on the show during the BCS championship game?
Wow, I mean, the game was such a dud of a game. Everyone seemed, you know, A.J. McCarron's girlfriend got an additional 90,000 Twitter followers last night after Brent Musburger was lusting over her over the air. And so and that seems to became the highlight of the game last night. with the game being such a dud of a game. And Darnell Dockett, defensive tackle from Arizona, he even tweeted her his phone number. And I was like, oh, man, that's cold. You trying to take another man's woman?
That was messed up. I mean, yeah, who would you rather watch, Rob? Would you rather see Notre Dame or would you rather see A.J. McCarron's girl? I mean, honestly, come on.
Oh, man, we all know the answer to that.
Oh, man. The sad thing was there's some controversy. She went to Auburn. I don't know if that's going to be a problem.
Yes.
But I don't know if that's going to last, Rob, because I think they just started dating in December of last year. So, AJ, unfortunately.
Oh, so just December or just a month ago?
Yeah, literally. Just
or December of 2011?
I thought it was December 2011
or December 2012?
Yeah, I think it's 2012 from what I was reading.
Oh, wow. They've only been dating about a month.
Yeah. Let me look that up real quick, dude. This is very important for us. But, yeah, I think it's pretty recent, Luke, too. We're bringing you all the news. We'll see how that plays out. Dating history. Yeah, this is important to me to know. Anyway, as we move on, we'll talk about that and all the good stuff. Anyway, let's talk about this. So let's jump into some NFL, or excuse me, some NBA. Please forgive me. We'll jump into that. I got a little distracted there. And the biggest thing that we're going to talk about, are the Lakers in trouble? This is a pretty big topic for all of our West Coast listeners. What do you think about this, sir? Are they in trouble?
I absolutely think they're in trouble. I mean, right now they lose again. Houston beat them pretty handily tonight. And, you know, teams are just running the Lakers. And Kobe may have said it best. You know, we're old and slow. And teams are just outworking them. They're out hustling. They're out running them. And, I mean, Houston put up 125 points tonight on the Lakers. I mean, that's just Houston is playing incredible basketball here. I think they won about 7 out of 9 or 8 out of 10, something like that. They're playing phenomenal basketball. But this is a team, you know, that we talked about prior to the season starting as being a team that should contend for a title when you put the likes of a Kobe, a Dwight Howard, a Steve Nash, and Pau Gasol on the same team. They have absolutely no chemistry, and I think there's some dissension behind the scenes. There's some rumors about Dwight Howard and Kobe, and it's an altercation a few weeks ago. And, you know, Dwight Howard made an interesting point here on Friday night. He says, when you look at that Clippers team play, they just look like a team that's having fun. They have great chemistry. They cheer for each other. When players are on the bench, they're cheering for the guys that's on the court. He says, we don't do that. And he said, in order for us to be successful, we have to develop a chemistry, even if we don't like each other off the court, which made me kind of read between the lines a little bit. There's obviously some players that don't like each other off the court in la-la land. And and so I think there's some dissension on that team. And if you look at their bench, they don't really have a deep bench this year. I guess they invested so much in the four elite players. And some of those, like I said, Gasol, health issues, and he's got a concussion now. Dwight Howard, back issues, now has a torn labrum in his shoulder. So I think there's some trouble. I think there's really some trouble in L.A. Just last week I was saying, you know, I still feel like at some point they'll at least make the playoffs but get eliminated pretty quickly. I'm not sure they're going to make the playoffs as of now.
Yeah. Yeah, just to confirm, they won't be dating for a month, too. So that's very important. Just want to throw that out there. AJ McCarron and Catherine Webb won't be dating for a month. Breaking news. Okay, no, back to the Lakers real quick, Rob. This is my thing, because if you're the Lakers, right, you royally messed up whenever you hired Mike D'Antoni. I know you're not a fan of him. You had Brian Shaw right there that has been running that same triangle offense that Phil Jackson started, which is where they excelled in. So right then and there, you had your coach. But no, you decide to go and hire Mike D'Antoni, who has this up-tempo style of offense, and you don't have the players for that. So right then and there, it was a bad fit from the start. And then you just kind of exasperate everything, like you talked about with, you know, Dwight Howard and the problems that he's having with Kobe Bryant. You got problems with Paul Gasol. He's not getting the touches, and then now he's out with a concussion. And you know, obviously, Paul Gasol, he's an all-star player. So now you got older players. you don't see players like San Antonio complain that we're old and slow. There's a way how they're able to fit that system. And obviously you inject different pieces of youth for that particular team. And right now, yeah, the Lakers are in serious trouble. And I'm telling you, Rob, a couple months ago, you couldn't tell me any Laker fan that was not thinking it. They thought having Steve Nash, boom, that was a missing piece. Getting an Antoine Jameson, boom, another missing piece. Adding a little more depth to their bench. You would have told they were pretty much saying that, hey, we got the championship locked up. We're ready to challenge Kevin Durant. But obviously, this is totally off. Chemistry is bad. Coaching is bad. Everything's bad.
Yeah, absolutely. And I totally agree with you in speaking with Laker fans. I absolutely agree. I know several of them. I thought the difference of Steve, just adding Steve Nash was going to be the difference. How much of an upgrade he was going to be over Ramon Sessions. I'm not so sure about that. And
yeah.
Steve Nash hasn't met a point guard in the NBA he can guard right now. And
yeah.
So that's just the truth. I mean, he's a great player. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. But he's a shell of what he was in his prime, of course. And so, yeah, there is definitely trouble in Lakers land. And I just personally agree. I said this from the very beginning. I don't agree with in-season firings most of the time. I didn't agree with firing Mike Brown. And it don't seem like it's been any better with Mike D'Antoni. And although, you know, the Nets are playing better since they fired Avery Johnson, I don't necessarily agree with that. And, you know, I know we had the Bucks as one of our topics here. I don't necessarily agree with the Bucks firing Scott Skiles at this point in season two. I mean, the Bucks right now will be a playoff team if the season starts. And they've been seeded as high as number four in the East right now. So at this point in the season, I just don't agree with, you know, I mean, you hire a new guy, you know, you don't have a lot of time to put their system in place. You know, in the NBA, you're playing almost every other night, and it's not a lot of practice time once you get in the season to kind of put in a new system and things of that nature. And so firing somebody in the middle of the season, I'm just not so sure is the answer. And I said it with Mike Brown, I said it with Avery, and I'm sticking to my guns. I don't even agree with Milwaukee firing Scott Skiles.
Yeah, that's interesting, Rob. So what about whenever the Knicks fired D'Antoni and Mike, our former coach, Mike Woodson, was able to do wonders with the Knicks? What about that move? Are you kind of saying?
Well, that worked out well. I mean, in most cases it don't. In that particular case, it did work out well. So, I mean, it is a good point that you bring up. I mean, obviously the Knicks have been a much better team with Mike Woodson. I think he's instilled a lot of defensive principles in that team that maybe Mike D'Antoni was not enforcing. And I think he slowed down the pace a little bit, you know, for the Knicks. He simplified some things. And so I think Woodson has done a great job with the Knicks. I mean, just look at it right now. They're the second-best team in the East as far as record-wise. And so, I mean, they have a legitimate chance. I still don't think – I know they beat Miami twice this year. I still don't think they can beat Miami in a playoff series, but they have a legitimate chance to go to the Eastern Conference Finals, that's for sure.
Gotcha. And I'm going to make a quick comment about Scott Skiles, too. And I think certain times it's a personnel move because before, if you look at the way the Bucks were built, they didn't have as many offensive weapons. But whenever you have guys like Brandon Jennings and Monte Ellis, and Scott Skiles, he's a disciplinarian. He's a definite believer of strong defense. You know, back in the day whenever he's playing with Orlando, just a tough, scrappy guard. And he wants to bring that to his teams. And unfortunately, it doesn't always fit. And you got certain NBA players can only be babies, and I'm not going to bring up Dwight Howard's name at all. But, you know, they do certain things to get coaches fired. And you really wonder if they didn't subscribe to what Scott Skiles was talking about. He's like, hey, guys, play defense. Well, we don't want to hear you play defense. We want to score points. You know, maybe Monte Ellis came from that more of a wide-open type of offense, and it just didn't fit what he, you know, the players that he has. So, you know, like you said, I agree with you. They shouldn't have fired him, but, you know, maybe that was a, it just wasn't a good fit as far as the players that they had. So, you know, who knows? Rob, we got about a minute, so we've definitely kept talking a long time. So you want to do some fantasy shout-outs before we walk out and wrap up the show, sir?
Fantasy shout-outs real quick. Dr. Duncan Stein leading our Fantasy Football League. Herb Daniels, yours truly, is a champion of the Bowl Challenge. Once
Congrats.
Again, join us next Tuesday night, 11 p.m. Eastern, 10 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Pacific, and 5 a.m. Wednesday morning for those of you all listening in Germany. Good night, people.
tonight, people. That was quick, Rob. We got a little bit of time. We probably got about 6 seconds or so. But once again, I want to thank you guys for listening in. I love the fact that Rob got that in there. You know, good stuff as well. Keep listening. Give us your thoughts, all that fun stuff. If I got some time to talk about Roger Clemens joining the Astros, it's a good move because they can't go any worse. So they lost 250 games last year. So they added some a name to that particular franchise. I think it's that, you know, it's good.
We shall see. For those of y'all in the Houston area, y'all need to tweet us, let us know if that's a good move.